Hey, welcome to The Interactive Journey. Come along with us as we share the stories of parents, children, and professionals navigating a challenging world of various diagnoses, life transitions, and being human.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to The Interactive Journey. My name is Rachel Watson. I am here with our amazing co-hosts, Logan.
Hello.
And Megan.
Hi.
So, in order for me to properly introduce our next guests, I will need about 15 minutes of your time to list all of the incredible things they are doing for the special needs community.
Or we could just talk to them.
These two ladies, they started a nonprofit. They're called Just Two Moms, although we know they're more than just two moms. They provide in services to increase awareness about autism and other developmental disabilities. They run parent support groups. You run toy and donation drives, amongst many other things that I'm sure that we will get to hear about today. So here are Debbie Schmidt and Christy Carlson. Welcome to The Interactive Journey.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So let's start out hearing a little bit about each of you. Christy, can we start with you? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Oh, good. I get to be the number one, huh? I'm usually the second of the two moms. But anyway, I'm Christy Carlson. I live in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, along with Debbie. I'll preempt some of her thunder there. I've lived in South Jersey. I just did the math for 33 years. I grew up in Jenkintown of Goldberg's fame. I did not know the Goldbergs, but I knew all of the JTP.
Hey, so, I lived in Huntington Valley. I was very close.
Yep. Claim to fame there. I'm kind of a professional volunteer. I've been doing that for a long time. First, I started with PTA because I have two children. And then I was a Girl Scout leader for 12 years. Still got to buy those cookies and support everybody. I was a hospice volunteer. And kind of now I help manage my son's care and my in-laws' care and occasionally my mother's care. I'm all around. I've been married to my husband, Chris, for about 30 years. I have two kids. I have Katie, who's 27 and is a librarian in Salem, Massachusetts. And then I have Eric, he's 21. He has autism and he just finished school last year. So it's a whole new journey for us. We're kind of stepping off the cliff and kind of figuring out how to do services ourselves. And that's a whole new thing. That's a whole other podcast we can do another day.
Right. Oh. That's like a series of podcasts.
Yeah, absolutely. And my new big obsession is my free little library. I have one at the base of my driveway. Debbie has helped me paint it and made it look beautiful. And I have
so fun.
One for kids and one for adults. So that's
really, I love that.
Really fun. It's like watching a bird feeder for people and watch them come and get books. So that has been wonderful. That's really been a great COVID thing for us. We created it to celebrate our daughter becoming a librarian during COVID. So yeah.
That's awesome.
Pretty much it about me. Debbie, go ahead.
So my name is Debbie Schmidt. I have lived in South Jersey now for 28 years. Came from the Jersey Shore. If you know a small town named Point Pleasant Beach, that's where I grew up. Half a block from the ocean. Yep.
And I know that spot.
You do. Not many people do. That's like the northern shore. But
yeah, my boyfriend grew up in Middletown.
Oh, okay. That's Monmouth County.
Point Pleasant, yeah.
There you go. Okay. So, married for 27 years. My son, happens to be 27 as well. There's that number. Christy calls herself a professional volunteer. I can say we have such common threads in that, my son is on the autism spectrum. He is my only child. And, when he was diagnosed, that's when I started getting involved in autism committees for the South Jersey Autism Walks. So our family was actually the founding family way back in the day with the National Alliance for Autism Research, which you probably have not heard of, because then they became Cure Autism Now, and then they became Autism Speaks. Mm-hmm. So from 1999 until 2014, I was on the Autism Walk Committee, meeting so many fabulous people, parents, caregivers, grandparents, siblings, children on the spectrum, variables of the spectrum. And we made a huge impact in South Jersey. I mean, it really, it brings tears to my eyes because we, you know, we started a movement that I'm sure you guys have been a part of in some way in parts of your lives, because everybody kind of finds a way to a walk at some point if you have a heart for the autism community. So what was I going to say? Like I said, my son is 27 now. He's 6'7". Christy, you never said how tall Eric is, because I haven't asked you these days.
I forgot. My son is 6'6", maybe 6'7". We do do Jordan, Debbie's son, and my son back to back, and they're pretty close.
Wow. Really tall guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah. So, I've also done volunteer work with the Aspen Group, the Asperger Syndrome Parent Group. For 10 years, I was a volunteer parent coordinator for that. So, you know, Christy and I really are talkers in the world of autism, and that's what we really have found that helps us. And we encourage other parents and caregivers to talk about their kids, because it's not an easy path. It's not an easy journey. And we try to make it a little bit better by talking about our experiences and sharing things that we've gone through and listening to people. So.
Well, that parlays very nicely into what is Just Two Moms.
Just Two Moms. Wow. It's a lot. When I met Christy, we were kind of introduced back in the days when our kids were in fifth grade at Woodcrest Elementary School here in Cherry Hill. And there was this, like, you need to meet this other mom. And we both had that, you know, little behind the scenes connection from people. And when they connected us, we both realized we had a lot in common. And yet our kids were so different, because all kids on the spectrum are different. And we really enjoyed each other's company, first of all, so we became really good friends, which was a bonus. But we really wanted to make a difference in one school only, because that's really our focus, our kids' school, right? We were a little selfish, said, let's do this for our own backyard here. And sure enough, we said, let's go make a schedule a meeting with the principal. And we sat across from him, and he was a lovely principal at the time. And we both said, you know, we really want to create awareness here. How do we do that? And he said, let's do that. So we both looked at each other. We were like, okay, now what? So it was one of those, be careful what you wish for. It kind of happened because it happened. And we sat down, we worked on, what do we want to say to these kids? We want kids to know that our kids want the same things you want, but they might just do things a little differently. They might need a little bit more help. We talked about the facts of autism, what we learned through reading about it, what we learned through being parents to it. We wrote a whole program on the statistics that we knew. And at the time, when my son was diagnosed in 1998, there were 1 in 10,000 children being diagnosed on the spectrum. And right now, it's 1 in 44 in the nation and 1 in 38 in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. So wow. I had a way of physically walking a timeline from all the way down there in the gym, wherever we were talking, to all the way over there. And it was like, it gave you chills every time you saw this, because the statistics changed abruptly since my son was diagnosed. Mm-hmm. And that's why we really were happy talking to groups, because it was such an important thing for them to know about. Part of our program, we also included an interactive portion where we talked about social skills, things that are difficult for our kids that we would role play. And we also lassoed in 13 fifth graders from our kids. Two of our kids were part of this, where we made a DVD called The Autism, the 411, an 8-minute documentary. Used from the school's borrowed camcorder, because we didn't even own a camcorder at the time. Real low budget. And it was one of those things that, you know, we I don't even know, Christy, like we really just, we winged it kind of, and it became something, you know, we wrote it and we planned it, but it was one of those things that just kind of happened. And the Philadelphia Inquirer picked up our story for a South Jersey cover story. And from that point, somebody sent our article to a grandmother in Florida and a grandmother in Pennsylvania. And sure enough, somebody reached out to us, this grandmother in Florida, and said, can I buy your DVD? And we were like, it's stuck in a camcorder. How do we do this? Again, be careful what you wish for. And so we burned a copy because my husband knows how to do that from his job, and sent for free down to this woman. And she just wanted to create awareness for the kids that her son was friends with, because her son was on the autism spectrum. So that was when we looked at each other, we thought, you know what, we may really have something here. Maybe we need to do this beyond the building that we were in, because at the time we did grade level assemblies for 5 days. And we said, you know what, this message is something that other students, teachers, and parents can really utilize. So we built our 501c3 in 2007, our nonprofit. We did mainly word of mouth assemblies, even though we did have a domain name, and we still do with our justtwomoms.com. Word of mouth was really how we kind of got anywhere. And we were busy and we were not busy. So it was a variable, you know. We went all over New Jersey, New York, Delaware, Pennsylvania, and we spoke to so many schools and kids and teachers, and it was just such an amazing journey for us. We really enjoyed every moment of it. Along the way, there were a lot of struggles, but, you know, we learned from every assembly something. So it is something to be really proud of, to get up and talk to students, because it kind of, it makes us feel so proud about our kids, you know?
I think about that time when you first started that, you know, it was a couple years ago. It was several years ago. And there wasn't the prevalence of discussion, understanding, inclusion. Absolutely. I mean, inclusion was like, I felt like a newer mm-hmm. buzz word and concept to people. Like, how are we going to make sure everyone is included to the best of their ability and to feel like part of the school, not the kids who are in a classroom over there, or the kid in the back of the classroom, or I don't know why he does that or she does that. You know, it was kind of really novel what you were doing. The awareness really wasn't there. I think it was a great service that you provided to schools. So what happened? So you started doing that, and then where have things evolved since then?
Well, things are kind of have pivoted for us. I mean, some of it's been COVID. Some of it's is our kids getting older. You know, as our kids get older, we don't necessarily want to talk about them as much. You know, we don't want to overshare, because, of course, they're more aware as well. Mm-hmm. So we don't really want to talk that much about their struggles, at least to kids. Okay. You know, if we're in an adult environment, we definitely will share a little bit more, obviously, because I feel like it's a little safer space, and people aren't going to necessarily say something when we're out in public.
They
encounter my son. Hey, I heard this story about you. So we've kind of pivoted now, and we're not really doing that kind of like assembly program. We're doing we're trying to do more kind of staff orientation, staff training, and we'd really, it's the support piece. We're really trying to get out there. We really want to offer support, because Debbie and I would not be where we are. Our kids would not be where they are. Our families would not be where they are without the support that we've received from other families. That is just so key. In the beginning, when your child is first diagnosed, you feel so alone. You don't know anything. I mean, now with the internet, there's so much to search for, but it's even that is overwhelming. It's too much information. So it's nice to be able to talk to a real person who's been through it or is going through it and kind of share.
Well, what's one piece of advice you'd give to someone who just received a diagnosis?
Well, that Google button is kind of hard to resist, isn't it? I mean, I think is reach out for support. Reach out for support and resources, and try to find someone who's further along the journey than you are, even if it's even a few months. Mm-hmm. You know, they know so much more than, you know, the newly diagnosed person, and can help you find kind of your people, your tribe. That's going to kind of help you see through this and decide what's best for your child.
And I'm going to piggyback that, Christy, because when we were first diagnosed and I went to my first Aspen support group meeting 2 months after, I mean, we were filing through not much paper that we could get our hands on with autism, let alone Asperger's syndrome, which that's what we were later diagnosed with. And we met a wonderful family who led the Aspen support group meeting, who I think their son is probably 9 or 10 years older than my son. And that was like, you just look to what will this journey be like for us in seeing it from other people, you know, even though our kids are so different and you never know what direction they're going to go in. It was the only hope that we had at the time of similarities to our kids. So it's really important to try to be a person who can talk about their child and to seek different services and different ways of support. So.
I thought it was really neat what you had said, Christy, before about the Google button, it being so tempting and everything. It can really lead you down a good path, or it could also provide some information that may not be the best for, especially when you're first starting out, but at any point in your journey, how do you, as people who provide support, how do you help help people to educate themselves on what to look for, what not to look for? Because, I mean, they're going to look to you for support, but, you know, each of you comes from your own point of view. People are coming from their own point of view. So, like, sharing all of that is so important, but how do you help them through that?
I always try to figure out where they are and where they're in their journey and where their kids are, because unfortunately now, you know, everyone is basically classified as having ASD, which is lovely, except I don't know where to start the conversation with you. I start the conversation with, is your child verbal? Like, right. I don't know, I have no idea where you are.
Right.
You know, you may have a child who's nonverbal. You could have a child who has Asperger's, or a child who has some social skills challenges, but, you know, otherwise seems to be developing normally. That can be tricky. So I try to talk to people and figure out where they are in their journey. And then I try to do a little matchmaking. Debbie and I are both great matchmakers because we know so many people. Right, so right. Sometimes someone will say something that kind of makes you think of someone else you know, and then you try to match them together, and they can maybe help each other on the journey.
That's great. So you're connectors.
Huge. And again, it goes back to you really, we've done enough resource fairs to try, when people come to our table, you know, they are seeking, they are talking to us, they want information, they want to share, they want to tell you about their child or their grandchild or whoever. That's the people that will get the most help, because if you can't talk about your child because it is so emotional and difficult, then I feel that those families won't get the help that maybe they could get. So we're always trying to be very encouraging, you know, please talk about things, because we know it isn't easy, but it's going to get you further than if you wouldn't. Yeah.
And there are so many special needs activities around now. I mean, so many sports. We're involved in almost all of them, I feel. You know, there are so many different things out there, social groups, our services that you guys offer, everything. That if you can connect with other parents, again, that goes back to the I'm not alone. You can see your child maybe in someone else's child, and that can give you really more support.
Yeah, that connection, that feeling of connection, because you're right. Yeah. You can feel very isolated and very alone. There was one mom that I had worked with. She actually had twins who, those twins are now adults, but she was very isolated and very alone. And so trying to get her connected with other resources, like to the point where I feel like sometimes it feels like almost there's the mental health component that comes in. If you're alone for so long, that can lead to some serious depression and all of that. And my heart just broke for her. And she did. She did get some counseling services, and also some people who would work in addition to what we provided, but also just to provide some respite for her children and get them involved in some sports and other activities. So there are resources out there, more so now than ever, I feel like. But it is finding those connections, and I think that's where you guys can really be important resources to them. Do you ever function as advocates with families? We get asked that all the time, and it's tricky.
I'm sure you do.
Well, it's tricky because tricky. I'll be honest, because of behavior analysis, I feel like I'm always advocating for the student, for the client, for the child. May not be what the parents want to hear, or the school wants to hear, whoever, but I'm always looking for what that person needs. But I'm a behavior analyst. I'm not an advocate. I'm not trained as an advocate or anything like that. You kind of get pushed in that direction sometimes, but really trying to keep that boundary. Do you feel like you ever have those experiences of functioning as an advocate? No.
I think Debbie and I are both also trying to kind of keep that boundary. We're a little more behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. You know, things are obviously different for me because now we're out of school. I felt like before we were in school, I kind of had to make sure that there were no repercussions if I should accompany someone to something. Right. Sure, everyone is always worried about that for their own child. You know, and neither Debbie and I are trained as advocates either. So, right. You know, Debbie's more familiar with some of the laws, et cetera. She's more my go-to on that. Mm-hmm. But we kind of want to build people up before they go to an IEP meeting or talk something through with somebody. And I would always go with somebody, but I wanted to be clear that I am not an advocate.
right.
Not licensed. I'm not an advocate.
And we do have a very close friend who helped us get Just Two Moms underway, so to speak, in the beginning time, who became an advocate. And so if there's anybody that we would ask us, do you know anybody, we would refer them. Mm-hmm. Because we really believe she's doing good things. Christy, I don't know. I haven't talked to her in a few years. I'm hoping she's still doing it, so I don't know. I guess
so, but we'll keep that out for now.
Right. No, yes. Absolutely.
If you're interested, contact us.
Right, exactly. And I was going to say, if you do ever have any resources or anything, we can always share it in the notes from sure. here. You know, but honestly, that is something that we always struggle to find. Is there's so many people who are needy. And there's SPAN, statewide parent advocacy network as one resource, but they are pretty slammed as well as far as how busy they are and the works that they're doing. So, you know, we always do look out for any other resources we can have. But I think that the idea that you have is trying to get to it before it gets to the point where you really need an advocate. If you can, sometimes we can skirt a problem just by kind of meeting in the middle or better understanding each person's perspective. Mm-hmm. As a parent, I happen to know special ed world a bit because of my job. But I think of somebody who comes in whose job, you know, has nothing to do with education or counseling or anything like that. And you're sitting in a meeting and you're like, I can do these things at home. Why can't you do this in school? Not understanding the regulations that they have to work within. Or, you know, a school who says, you know, well, why can't the parents just do this? And it's like, wait a minute, you have all this going. Do you understand? I have other children. I have a job. I have these other responsibilities. So kind of helping them to see each other's perspectives can sometimes solve a little bit of the problems.
Yeah. And when Debbie and I's kids were younger, I mean, of course, the numbers were lower. So now you have the same size pots, but you're servicing more and more people. So it's a very fine line, I think, for school districts. Not that I say it's right, but they're trying to be fiscally responsible.
Uh-huh.
And still provide services for all children in the district.
Yeah.
And that is a challenge.
It is really hard because you do have to balance it all out. I mean, I had a family member who said to me, there's this was years ago because the child is now 33. Said to me, why is it that this one kid gets all this attention in this classroom? And my kid's still just trying to learn. And I'm like, okay, well, it starts at home with the education and just really, I know. I mean, again, mm-hmm. that was years ago. And like, you know, because the person was younger, not trying to make excuses for it, because I am, I guess. Mm-hmm. But just trying to educate a little bit, like, wait a minute, let's talk about this for a minute. Let's talk about what's happening in this situation. And really, like, figure out, like, this person, this child has a right to be in this classroom as well. If she can, because it was a female, if she can maintain the academic rigor that's needed in there, that's one reason. Or if, like, socially, that's the reason. You know, there's so many different reasons for being in there. If your child is struggling, then you bring that to the attention to the teacher. Say, you know what, they're not getting this concept. Again, it's opening those lines of communication and having that dialogue. Because just as the child who is diagnosed with whatever has needs, so do the other kids in there. And so you can balance, I've seen it, you can balance both. You can get everybody's needs met while still making everyone feel included. So, so let's talk about, so one of the things that we often as a company look at is we work with individuals largely who have some type of identified special need or special speciality in some type. We have neurotypical kids as well who will provide some support to often their siblings. Have you done any work with siblings or supporting them or any advice on how to help them through the process of maybe sometimes they get a little, we've had individuals who get a little bit depressed because they don't get as much attention, or maybe they're just struggling with identifying who they are in this world, especially in the teenage years. Do you have any advice for parents of how to navigate that with having neurotypical kids, whatever that is, and kids who may be diagnosed?
That's a hard one. If I had the answer to that, Debbie and I would be millionaires. That's definitely tricky. I mean, I obviously have two children. My kids are 5 years apart. So, you know, that did become an issue. For many years, I always asked that my child not be put in an inclusion class, my older daughter, because I said life is inclusion for us at home. Mm-hmm. And the 1 year I didn't ask, she was put in inclusion, which was and turned out to be a great experience for her. You know, right. That can be really, really tricky for sure. I feel like, you know, as families get involved in special needs activities, it's nice that everyone comes to these things because then the siblings get to meet the other siblings. Ah. You know, you can't necessarily require that, but I think that that's really helpful because then you see that there are other people. You might be able to strike up a conversation. The parents can foster that and try to do things as a family, like maybe like bowling, something that maybe everyone can participate in. And then you're doing an activity, but you're still all together.
Okay.
And then maybe some conversation will, you know, spring from that. So that's what I think is that any outing should also be kind of inclusive to the whole family.
Mm-hmm.
That's really important.
Yeah, great. I was going to say we learned so much doing the assemblies when students would get up and share. We did a Q&A, not on every assembly, but when we had time. And we've had so many experiences where somebody would say in an elementary age, my brother is on the autism spectrum, and we would, you know, commend them for getting up and talking about it. And they would talk about something that was really amazing about them or something that was really challenging. So we really saw such amazing stories and kids that just love their siblings for who they were. And what we tried to foster from that was the people would see our kids without fear, because if you take fear away, they're just any other kid. But, you know, if you put something in front of them that they act a different way, behave a different way, that's going to push them away from kids to want to play with them and be with them. So, you know, sometimes it took a little bit more explaining from an adult or a teacher to a class or a situation. And that's okay. You know, as long as people get information, as long as kids got information, they'll go on and they'll do what, you know, whatever the next thing is that they're going to do together. So, you know, we were really amazed by some of the Q&As that we were part of where students would get up and talk about their loved ones. Yeah.
That's wonderful. That is. So talk about your boys. What's going on with them nowadays? How is adulthood?
Yeah.
Well, adulthood is adulthood. my son Eric is, like I said, 21. He's actually doing great. He went through all through Cherry Hill Schools and did beautifully. Thank you, Cherry Hill School District. And then his last year, because when you have an IEP, you can go to school. The state is forced, but is required to offer education to 21. And with COVID, a lot of people were offered an additional year. Okay. So when my son was 20, we transferred to a program that's run through the Yale School. That's usually a school for those with autism, called Project Search, which is wonderful. That's an internship program that right now, what Project Search we were involved in was at Jefferson Hospital in Cherry Hill. There's also one in the Stratford location, and he job sampled three different jobs there. And then the idea is then to hire them from either within into the organization or as one of their like partner organizations. So we were blessed to then have a job created for our son, and he is a greeter at Cherry Hill Jefferson Hospital. So if you go into the hospital and you see a giant that booms, welcome to Jefferson. That is my son.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yes. Yeah, so awesome. He and several of his friends who are also in Project Search have been hired through this program. So it's just really wonderful. And that's been very good for us as we've tried to figure, you know, everything out. So, and it's just trying to find social opportunities as well, because, you know, school before provided social opportunities, not so many with COVID, but, you know, that's definitely a challenge as well.
Yeah.
And how many days is he working, Christy?
He is working 5 days a week. He works about 20 hours a week.
Okay. That's wonderful.
Yes. And he loves it, right?
He does love it. He does love it.
That's wonderful. Yeah.
And Debbie, where is your son right now?
Right now, I look at the clock. He's on a plane to Phoenix because he's heading to the Super Bowl to meet up with my husband, who works for the NFL. And yes, that's how he got the tickets. So it was not as difficult as a lot of the people I read in the paper getting tickets. So
nobody here refinanced all of their houses.
None of that. And, yes. Let me tell you, trepidation from the morning wake up to the deep breathing, the transitions that I could only name that I could see, you know, he wore a hoodie, decided to wear a hoodie leaving. And he said to me, do you think I'll have to take this off for TSA? And I said, I don't know. You may have to, so be prepared. So it's all about what could be. You know,
right.
The transitions, if I would have said, no, you're fine. And then they told him to take it off. Oh, that would have been really bad. So, and he's alone. I dropped him off. It's not that he hasn't done this before. This was his sixth Super Bowl. So yeah, he's a pretty fortunate young guy. Believe me, he knows it. We tell him that a lot. But it's daunting. You know, he doesn't know if something's going to change very quickly in the next, you know, 2 hours, and how one reacts to that is really what it's all about. You can only prepare him so much. That's my mantra. But I do a lot of talking to try to get him prepared so he may know what could happen. So,
right. But I was going to say, the Jordan I knew in middle school, in elementary school, Debbie didn't think, no one would have been able to do something like this. So it's just amazing. You know, time is wonderful.
It can be. Yes.
Hard work, good parenting. I'll pat ourselves on the back, Debbie, both of us are in our husbands. Therapy services, as you guys offer, you know, school, friends, that all works together. And it makes things, you know, like this Super Bowl trip possible for our kids.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. I've always been the type of person who, like, when I know that transitions are difficult, I kind of had to say, but I can't shelter him from this because we want him to be independent as much as he can be. Yes, he still lives at home. Yes, he is seeking a job, and no, that hasn't happened yet, but we are working on that as much as he will allow for that. And it's not easy. So, you know, the fortunate circumstance is he went away to college. He got into 7 out of 7 colleges and universities. So it wasn't the academics. It was the social portion of, can I live away from home? What will all the transitions be like in my day? And, you know, academically, he was on the dean's list 4 out of 8 semesters. So it's not that he can't do it. It's all the other things that you can't foresee, you know, as we call the trip hazards. So, preparing him as much as he can for a day, let alone the four days in front of him going to Phoenix, it's a lot. It's a lot of trying to foresee, but you're never going to be perfect,
right?
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, he is seeking a job. And like many people in his age group, he's not there yet. But we'll get there. And it's just going to take the time that it's going to take.
Yeah, that's That's the truth. It is. I mean, we can want it as much as we want. We can prep as much as we want.
Yeah.
But until that time comes, until the right circumstances are there as well, because you wouldn't want him, he wouldn't want to be in a circumstance that's not going to be conducive for him to be successful either.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So what are your plans for Just Two Moms moving forward?
Well, we've done our big pivot, like I said, that we're now doing more support, more kind of staff training. In over COVID, we really did a little bit of kind of fairy godmothering. We were able to be blessed with some donations, and we're able to help bless like several group homes with fun things. I think there was indoor toys, Debbie, right? And outdoor toys.
Indoor toys and crafts. We had our fun buying up all the crafts for wish lists that they gave us. We're really happy when we get a wish list. So.
Oh, yeah. That's great. Yeah. And yeah, I hear you did a toy drive to benefit the Kinney Center at St. Joe's. I'm a hawk, so I'm very happy to hear that. That's wonderful. Thank you.
Yes, that was a memorial donation. Unfortunately, my father passed in October of 2020. He had worked at LaSalle, attended LaSalle. Sorry, Hawk. And
love LaSalle.
As an explorer. Attended LaSalle and then taught there for over 40 years. Wow. So when he passed, he was an English teacher. We wanted to try to do something with memorial donations that combined education and also combined autism, the true to our mission. So the Kinney Center there was wonderful. They're educating the future, people who are going to work with our kids and our kids' kids. And that was really a match made in heaven for us.
That is wonderful. And they have a big campaign going on right now. They're expanding. They're going to have a whole new facility. Yes. Mm-hmm. So it's really exciting. Yeah. So good stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you. Sorry, I sidetracked us. I know we're talking about all the collections and the work that you do, but we talked about Just Two Moms future. So I love that you do staff support though, too. And training, parent training and support as well, because that really, truly getting a highly qualified and trained person to, whether it's a family member or an outsider, to be able to work with any of the people that you target, I think it's just so key to have people who are educated and know what they're doing from people who have lived it, which is awesome.
Yeah, and I appreciate that, Megan. I mean, many years ago, we did a staff in service at one of the schools, and someone asked a question. They said that the child they were working with had GI issues. And we said, oh, of course. And they're like, what do you mean? We're like, many of our kids have GI issues. And that's not something that they knew. It's obviously a conversation they didn't want to have or couldn't have with a parent. But it was something that, you know, that we discussed that, you know, we knew many people who had kids who are on the autism spectrum, had GI issues, food aversions, et cetera. It's nice to be able to talk to someone who, as you said, lived it and is coming from a different perspective.
Right. Well, thank you so much for being with us. Logan has the next part. It's our favorite part, Logan's top 10.
Oh, okay. I guess I'm ready.
Okay. So I'm going to ask you 10 questions, and your job is to just answer them as quickly as possible. Let's say Christy answers first, and then Debbie will have you answer second, it'll just sound all jumbled.
I'm ready.
All right. So, Christy, a four-letter word that starts with C.
Oh, gosh, I'm blanking. I was an English major, and I'm blanking. Cake. How about that? Cake.
And then Debbie gets a four-letter word that starts with D.
Dang. How you like that?
Your favorite store.
Favorite store? A Target. Sorry.
Aldi.
Sorry, Target is wonderful. A tool you never leave home without.
Tool I never leave home without. Gosh, these are hard questions. A tool? I get a lot of stuff in my purse, lady, but a tool is not one of them.
Well, think outside the box with the word tool.
Right.
I hate to say it. It's a pill container. That is a tool that I never leave the house without.
And I think about my my mask these days, because I still wear a mask wherever I go inside. So there's my tool.
And I'm going to actually piggyback to Debbie. Debbie should have been measuring tape. Debbie is pretty good at home improvement.
All right, but that could be taken the wrong way, Christy.
She and I have done many, many projects together.
So it's like whipping out a measuring tape.
She has a measuring tape.
You never know. One. You're right. I forgot.
You never know when you're going to have to measure a vanity or something.
Absolutely.
Would you rather stay in or go out?
I would rather stay in.
Yeah, I would rather stay in. Yeah.
What's your go-to lazy dinner?
Lazy dinner. Okay. You open two cans of chili, a can of tomatoes, and then some cans of different beans, black beans, other kind of beans, and then you pour it in a pot or, you know, a container, and then you put cornbread on top and you bake the whole thing in the oven.
Wow.
Yeah, because it's not, you know, it's shelf stable. I'm very good at shelf stable.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. And it's funny because I have three nights where I'm alone here with my family gone. And I've got frozen leftover foods from, because I love cooking. Like, I would cook over anything. My go-to that I don't have on my scheduled plan to eat in the next 3 days is spaghetti, where I would make the spaghetti and I pre-saute fresh garlic with red pepper flakes. And then once the spaghetti is done, I put it in a bowl with Parmesan cheese and Italian breadcrumbs. It's amazing.
These don't sound so lazy to me, though.
I know. Well, it's as lazy as I would get because I do way more intricate foods, but that's my that's comfort food on my happy level.
You can find the recipes below.
Definitely. Five ingredients.
Your favorite hobby?
Scrapbooking.
Painting walls, which after this is over, I have my whole laundry room on my docket that I painted the ceiling 1 week ago and I'm working on the walls. So I love painting. Yeah,
I love that. Because I was just telling somebody I literally hate painting. So
I know.
Somebody's got to love it.
Mm-hmm. That's me.
I'll cut the corners in all day long, but somebody else has to fill it in. Your favorite pizza topping?
Favorite pizza topping? Black olives.
Oh my God. Peppers and onions.
That's a good one. Mm-hmm. Your favorite rainy day activity?
Probably reading.
Mm-hmm. Counted cross stitch. Yeah.
I take all of these answers into my own personal bank of things to try.
Yeah, that's my Calgon take me away.
I love cross stitch, but my eyes are getting old and it's harder.
I had double cataract surgery in 2019. It gets much better after.
Okay.
I can see again. Go figure.
I'm hoping we all agree on this, but Eagles or Chiefs?
Oh, go Birds.
Oh, woo! My God. Yeah, there's no agree. I mean, it's only green.
I was like, there's another option?
There's no option.
No option. And then if there was one thing that you want people to take away from your journey, what would it be?
Hope. It's definitely hope. You know, both of our kids are not the kids they were when they were two or three. Those were some dark times for sure. They were difficult times. I could never have seen how wonderful our kids have done. You know, it's just amazing. So I think hope. Even when it gets very frustrating, no, you can't put a price on maturity. You can't put a price on all of the wonderful things and services that we know you're going to get for your child and the good parent you're going to be for your child. Amazing things are going to happen. Even the unexpected things are going to be are going to exceed your expectations.
Right. And you never know what life lesson you're going to learn through that you will never forget, even though it was really difficult and it could make such an impact. It can make such change. And then you know where to go from here. I mean, my favorite phrase that Christy knows is we go from here, and you could inflect it any way you want. You can be really ticked off in your day and it's like we go from here. But, you know, our kids have changed so much since their beginning days, and they are such incredible young men and young daughter. And, you know, we're very fortunate to have been home with them and to have created something that was very special. And again, we don't know where we're going to go with this. We hope that we can make a difference, again, in creating some support for families and parents and caregivers. But we continue talking because it works for us, and we hope that we can encourage that for other people.
That's wonderful.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm. And I would also like to give a shameless plug. Because we would love to hear from people. You know, COVID has been hard on all of us. Yeah. And we would love to be able to encourage others. We have a website, www.justtwomoms.com. We have an email, justtwomoms@verizon.net. And we have a phone number, which I never remember, so Debbie has to give it to you.
It's 856-429-1400.
And that's also a cell phone number, so you could also text us. Yeah. On that number as well. So we would love to hear from people and, you know, be able to offer support.
That's great. And you know what? We will put that in the notes as well, so people can have it in case they couldn't jot it down fast enough. Right. Hopefully they'll re-listen then if they need to. Oh, it's so great to have you both here. Thank you.
Thank really you guys nice so much.
Thank you.
What you're much. Up to. So you're welcome.
Go birds.
Go birds.
Go birds.
Thanks for listening. Looking for more? Be sure to follow us on your favorite podcast app and Instagram at The Interactive Journey. Questions, comments, or want to be a guest on our show? We'd love to hear from you. You can message us at podcast@interactivekids.com or on Instagram at The Interactive Journey.